Welcome to the Wild Podcast. Inspire people, support each other's growth, and create a meaningful life. That's the mission of this podcast, and I welcome you to the community. Since you are listening to this right now, I suspect that you are a curious soul who loves expanding your own horizon, learning about other people's authentic life choices, and getting inspiration to put into action what you are passionate about. Whether you are already out there living life in all your true colors or currently struggling to break through your cocoon, together we dare you to grow closer and closer to the wildly vulnerable, authentic you. My name is Tina Hewelt, and in this episode I bring to you a topic that sort of imposed itself. In the previous episode with musical theater performer Romeo Salazar, that was episode 15, we came to brush the topic of the so-called imposter syndrome. Do you remember? Romeo said it was quite a common phenomenon among his fellow actors and musicians, and that he himself had felt like an imposter at times.
There is this very famous term called imposter syndrome. Have you heard of it?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
A lot, if not all, actors have that. And especially in my case, I've always been very self-critic. And tying that up with, like you said, you know, why I was overachieving. Looking at it back now, I was overachieving as a child. I wanted to excel in everything. I wanted to be the best at the time in school, in our community. I was the best basketball player. It was because at the time I wasn't aware. I had so much, you know, when people try to overcompensate. Mm-hmm. Because I felt as a child not loved enough, or maybe there was something missing. I wanted that recognition.
If you have listened to the episode, you know that Romeo has built a strong career despite the absence of any formal training in music. In the presence of well-established musical theater performers, he got picked for a lead role during an audition as a total unknown rookie. This is a great breeding ground for pressure and doubt. Have these people really made a smart choice picking me? And do you remember who else mentioned feeling like an imposter at times? A gold star to you, my friends. Yes, that's been Ashley Seema. Our guest in episode 4, who swam the goddamn English Channel in freezing cold water nonstop in an excruciating 21-hour swimming marathon. She had to go to that extreme length to finally accept that she is capable, is resilient, is enough to pull off an impressive feat like this. And that there is no way even her doubtful, insecure mind can possibly attribute this success to someone else's abilities.
I find it really difficult to be positive about myself, and to the point where I've almost sort of felt like a bit of an imposter in my own life sometimes. I never really allow myself to take pride in things that I have achieved. So for example, in my career, I sort of think, oh, well, I'm only here because this thing happened and that thing happened and this team were around me. I never really reflect on it as something that I have achieved. And I think there is no denying in this swim that it was me who achieved it.
And there has been yet another person speaking about their insecurities on the podcast. Well, yes, that would have been me. In episode 14, I talk about my very own fear of not being perfect. In what way perfectionism or the need to be perfect is linked to imposter syndrome will be unpacked a bit further into this episode. So, apparently, this imposter syndrome phenomenon is one that keeps surfacing in the conversations I have in and outside of this podcast. And I'm sure that some, if not many, of you will recognize yourselves in this episode. Since it has a strong impact on the well-being of people, their self-esteem, and how they handle opportunities in life, I think this is an important conversation to have. So let's unpack this, shall we? Here we go. First of all, imposter syndrome is not an actual officially recognized mental health issue, even though the word syndrome might sound like a clinical diagnosis. The topic gained widespread public attention when, in 1985, psychologist Pauline Rose Clance published her book, The Imposter Phenomenon, Overcoming the Fear That Haunts Your Success. Since then, research on the prevalence of this phenomenon first focused on professional women. Later, studies uncovered that it does not only concern women, but that it is particularly prevalent amongst people working in a field where their gender or race makes them an obvious minority. This seems to be connected to another phenomenon called stereotype threat. Ever heard of it? Stereotype threat has a twisted way of working against people. Quote, "The awareness of the bias against your gender or race might lead you to work harder in order to disprove harmful stereotypes. Simply being aware of these negative stereotypes can affect your performance, leading you to fixate on your mistakes and further doubt your abilities." This is a quote taken from an article about the imposter syndrome on Healthline.com. So, what exactly is this imposter syndrome thing? The term is used to describe consistent feelings of inadequacy despite the presence of opposing evidence. When people feel like they are not adequate for the job, the role, or other things they have supposedly been given by others. Typically, when people feel like an imposter, they fear they can't measure up to the expectations placed on them. Even more, they feel like they do not deserve their successes despite experiencing these very successes. As if others seem to not see them for what they really are, like they might be found out as a fraud any time. So as a result, people with imposter syndrome put themselves under a lot of pressure to keep up with the self-imposed expectations. Also, they tend to work extremely hard to make up for their alleged shortcomings or to become worthy of the roles and successes they feel like they do not deserve to have. The experience of discrepancy between how others regard them and how they see themselves can be a constant source of stress. The people affected may also experience feelings of shame for being the flawed, insecure, not actually having all the answers human being. Similarly, there may be feelings of guilt involved. Why guilt, you may ask? Well, guilt because the people affected may actually believe they are misleading the people in their environment. Like they are tricking them into having a higher regard of the person in front of them than what this person actually, supposedly, deserves. No wonder anxiety, depression, and burnout can be a result or at least coincide with imposter syndrome. So if you haven't yet gotten an idea of what this thing is about, let's insert a, yes, somewhat caricatured and not entirely accurate example here. Have you ever met the kind of chihuahua-sized dog who swaggers about the park and barks at all the big boys as if she was the grandest and strongest of all? Well, this is not the type we're talking about here. Imposter doggy, rather, is the Great Dane who quivers in the face of a pack of golden retrievers. He doesn't see himself for what he is and what he has got. The golden retrievers, of course, are well aware of the 90-kilogram fighting weight of our imposter friend. But no matter how much respect they pay our Great Dane, he'll still find evidence of him being overestimated in his features. Okay, this might sound all cute, but I reckon it's no fun for imposter doggy himself. Neither is it a fun way of being in our human world. But how exactly is it possible to doubt one's own abilities and achievements? The causation of this phenomenon is multifaceted, including personality traits and family background. For individual cases, this is not simple to discern. Besides the question of cause, the question of manifestation in thinking patterns is rather interesting. In order to understand the peculiarities of thinking patterns in people with imposter syndrome, I want to introduce you to a fascinating psychological concept, the attribution theory. Again in 1985, that year the constellation of stars must have been very favorable for academic breakthroughs in social psychology, Bernard Wiener published on a three-dimensional model on how people attribute successes. What do I mean by saying attributing success? Well, let's turn this around and use an example of how people explain the situation when caught on public transportation without a ticket. That never happened to you, right? One could say, clearly someone just didn't buy a ticket. However, what people tend to say is something along the line of, well, the ticket machine was broken, or the zone and pricing model just isn't transparent, or my dog ate my ticket. Short funny side story from my past. As first semester students of psychology, we had to conduct a little experiment with waiting passengers in a subway station. We had one of us begging strangers for some money so he could supposedly buy a ticket. The rest of us were scattered across the platform, seemingly innocent bystanders that were secretly scribbling down notes on people's reactions to our fellow students' play. It was like a scene in a cheap movie. So I was so busy observing while acting as if I was innocently reading a book that I did not recognize. I held my dummy book upside down. Anyways, we were so surprised about people's willingness to give some money, even if the person asking for it seriously used the line, "My dog ate my ticket." But back to the topic. I was trying to explain to you what attribution meant in this realm. So basically, one type of attribution is to attest that an error was caused by yourself versus by external circumstances or other people. Like in the sorry no ticket dilemma. The same applies to successes or to any other type of events and behaviors. Bernard Wiener, the guy who came up with the three-dimensional attribution theory, calls this locus of control. It can either be internal, within myself, or external, outside of myself. The locus of control is one of the three dimensions. Another one is stability. Here, the question is the event, for example, a success or a failure, influenced by temporary changing factors or by stable unchanging ones? So, was it luck? Or are there personality traits or other aspects at play that are generally hard to change? I'll give you an example of this in a minute. Let's first hear the third dimension, controllability. This is to say, to what extent do I think I can influence the event concerned? An example, I can make sure I set three separate alarms so as to definitely not sleep in on the day of my job interview. But I can't control whether or not the person in charge of interviewing me might call in sick that day. All right, that's it. We have locus of control, stability, and controllability. In order to really get it, here is another example. I described it in a gender-neutral way. Lou, 19 years old, got accepted to enter university and do their bachelor's degree in economics. Hence, Lou has passed the exact same admission criteria that their fellow students have passed. Still, Lou thinks they are somehow less than the other students. Less capable, less educated, less likely to achieve good grades. Now, after the first semester, Lou passes all exams for which they, of course, have studied extremely hard. Let's listen to fictional Lou's inner dialogue about their achievement. Well, I'm happy I made it this time. But I heard that this year's exams were particularly humane. After lots of students didn't make it last year, and there have been lots of complaints, the lecturers must have decided to take it easier on the students this year. Also, I would not have survived the class if it hadn't been for my friends who gave me their notes. They sure helped me understand the topics better during our coffee chats. But what if next year I can't count on them. What kind of attribution style can you make out here? Let's hear Lou's thoughts once more. Well, I'm happy I made it this time. Aha, so Lou thinks this might have been a one-time experience. This translates to it being an unstable factor. Lou does not rest assured that this is likely to be a consistent outcome. Next passage. But I heard that this year's exams were particularly humane. After lots of students didn't make it last year, and there have been lots of complaints, the lecturers must have decided to take it easier on the students this year. After lots of students didn't make it last year and there had been lots of complaints, the lecturers must have decided to take it easier on the students this year. Okay, so Lou thinks they are not responsible for the positive outcome of the exams. No, all students who filed their complaints are, and of course the lecturers who decided to pose easy questions, which even the Lous in this world can answer. I see. This clearly makes for external attribution. And can Lou control what types of questions will be asked next time? No. External, unstable, out of one's own control. This is a classic imposter syndrome type of attribution pattern for successes. Lou does not even mention their hard work and the fact that they might just be smart and diligent and deserving of the outcome. Lou also does not muse about the likely circumstance that not all students passed this year's exams or achieved grades as good as Lou did. Looked at from the outside, one can't help but wonder what is different about Lou as compared to these less successful students. Clearly, there must be some individual strengths that Lou has got going for themselves. So here we are. Lou has succeeded at something, but they think that the outcome has not been achieved in their own power, that it is out of Lou's control, and that it might not repeat itself in the semesters to come. What a cheerful prospect. What do you think this will leave Lou feel? Happy? Proud? Relieved? No. I bet you it will be rather anxious, insecure, or even ashamed that Lou got grades they think they do not even deserve. For a contrast, let's look at Jamie's thoughts, one of Lou's fictional classmates. Dang, I can't believe I passed the exams that well. I mean, with all the preparation I put in, I knew I couldn't fail entirely. But I heard rumors that the exams were a bit easier this time around. But I reckon I can even turn the results up a notch in the coming exams if I refine my study system a bit. Now I know I can do this university thing, and I'm curious for the next semester. Now that we've walked through Jamie's example together, I believe you can identify the attribution style from Jamie's words. What do you think? Yes, that's right. Jamie acknowledges external factors of influence, but ultimately attributes their exam results to their very own capabilities and actions. Since this is under Jamie's control, after all, they can choose whether or not to work on their study regimen. This provides Jamie with the necessary trust to forecast consistently pleasing results in their academic future. Internal, stable, controllable. The opposite of Lou's choice of attribution in this situation. And looked at as an attribution pattern, this is way more beneficial for one's feeling of self-worth, self-efficacy, stress level, and, well, yes, sanity. We've just distinguished two types of attribution patterns in the face of a success. Would you be surprised if I told you that the same applies to events of errors, failures, or similar experiences? Well, it does, except that it is the opposite. Imagine now that Jamie scratches their beloved BMW in a mishap maneuver at a car park. Listen to Jamie's thoughts now. Ugh, what a crappy day. I'm really pissed with myself. That could easily have been prevented. I haven't had any accident in years, and now this. I really need to pay more attention next time. And now let's contrast this with what Lou might think in the same situation. This was bound to happen someday. Stupid me! I'm so bad at keeping my focus and navigating space. I'll never make a good driver. Do you get what happens here? What does Jamie do? Well, first of all, Jamie absolutely acknowledges their mistake. After all, there would be no point in arguing that the other parking car just sprung at Jamie's poor vehicle. However, what Jamie does not do is attributing this mistake to an imminent, permanent flaw of Jamie's abilities. Also, Jamie can see the actions they need to take in order to decrease the likelihood of this happening again. Internal, unstable, controllable. In contrast to that, how did your witness lose in a murmuring? Does Lou think they can likely prevent this sort of mishap in the future? No. Because Lou is convinced they are generally prone to such errors due to personality predispositions they cannot control. Internal, stable, uncontrollable. Just to be clear, I am not saying that these attribution patterns do only occur in people struggling with imposter syndrome, nor am I saying that people who do struggle with this display these attribution styles at all times. Every one of us applies varying attribution styles in varying situations. What I am saying, though, is that some people tend to apply self-degrading attribution styles more often than does them justice. And that people struggling with imposter feelings are more prone to do just that, with painful results. Apart from mental health issues such as anxiety, chronic stress, depression, etc., these thinking patterns have a massive impact on how we live our lives, how we embrace opportunities, and ultimately, what experiences we allow ourselves to make. And coming back to Mr. Bernard Weiner, the researcher behind the three-dimensional attribution model, he related his findings regarding how people attribute the causes of events with the research of people's motivation. He theorized that people's confidence in a positive outcome is directly related to their willingness to attempt a task. So, if you thought that your success at an endeavor was purely at the mercy of luck or other fleeting, uncontrollable circumstances, how confident in succeeding would you be? If you have seen proof of your ability to achieve similar things, but time and time again you are willing to neglect this evidence and attribute the achievement to anything but your effort, your skills, your capability, how confident are you in succeeding this time? The answer is not so much. Think about it. If you go down that road, you are not only robbing yourself of pride, of satisfaction, of joy in the here and now, you are also stealing from yourself future opportunities that might turn into successes, or educational mistakes, or wild adventures, or eeks, I left my comfort zone growth moments. Your thoughts aren't innocent here. If you let them go wild, not the good type of wild, you might end up derailing the train of your life. And before you say it, yes, I know, these patterns are not as easy to change as it is to operate light switches. After all, that's why they are called patterns. Still, there are things you can do to train your mind and redirect your attributions. And here is some inspiration. Number one, meditate on the mind monkey. The first thing is to actually pay attention and to notice consciously how you attribute your achievements and your setbacks. Start by simply observing your thoughts in your everyday life, without judgment. Can you recognize a tendency? For which ones of your experiences do you think you are responsible? For which ones is it other people or circumstances? What do you think lies in your control, or at least influence? What not? When do you believe an experience is due to stable factors, and when due to changeable ones? After you have gathered some data on your attributions, Ask yourself, with no censorship, how is this serving me in my life? Are there benefits? Are there costs? Number two, be a logic monster. Annoy your inner imposter with relentless curiosity. Ask yourself some questions about the assumptions it blurts out. What proof do I have that I'm not enough? What proof do I have that I am capable? Have I succeeded at a similar thing in the past? Does that mean that I'm generally capable of succeeding at this? Why do others support me in my aspirations? Can they all be blind and fooled by me so that they cannot see I don't have what it takes? Or is there something to their admiration of my skills? Number three, if you are worried to be found out, come out. Being an imposter is all about pretending to be someone you're not. So stop just that. You think people overestimate your abilities? You fear that if you don't work hard enough to cover up, they might uncover your flawed truth? Well, be the one to let them know up front. Differentiate realistically what you know, what you're still learning, what you have managed to achieve in the past, what you are only improvising now, what you are insecure about. Tell people how you think they perceive you and ask them how they actually see you. Maybe they have convincing explanations for why they don't think you're a superhero and for why they do think you are. The best thing? In opening up about your insecurities instead of putting on a show, you help others do the same. And that can be a very healing experience. I want to gift you with a quote by Chris Martin, lead singer of the band Coldplay. It's helpful to have some arrogance with paranoia. If we were all paranoia, we'd never leave the house. If we were all arrogance, no one would want us to leave the house. Feeling like an imposter is not a flaw in its own right, so we must not feed it even more feelings of guilt and shame. If it befalls us, we can use it to remind us to honor a healthy dose of humility. We just shouldn't humiliate ourselves when we deserve otherwise. So what do you think? Do you recognize similar thinking patterns, similar feelings in yourself? What can you share with our community that would be of help to others? Please make sure to pay us a visit at www.wild.one and comment on the blog post to this episode. Share this podcast with friends and strangers if you liked it. And if you extra loved it, follow and rate Wild Podcast on your favorite podcasting platform. As wild people, we are a diverse community, and we may live and work in environments in which we stand out because of the fact that we do not represent the majority, whether it be in terms of gender, sexuality, religion, mental and physical abilities, language, skin color, and more. Stereotype threat, you heard it, is a thing that works against us at times. But we host our thoughts, and we can choose to challenge them if they come from a place of fear and not from a place of love. The antidote to feeling like an imposter is authenticity. You can't fool anyone if you're being authentic, and you can't fake authenticity. In this sense, until we speak again, live boldly, live vulnerably, live wildly.